Welcome to episode number 16 of The Art of Med School, where we help creative minds understand medicine. This episode, we're talking about immunoglobulins, local food, and GI tissues.
All right, Micah, how's it going?
Not too shabby, you know. Just living the life, chasing the dream.
Chasing the dream?
Yep. Yeah.
Did you have a nice lazy Sunday morning?
I had a wonderful lazy Sunday morning.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Yeah. But, you know, we post these on Thursday, so Sunday morning was like 4 days ago.
That's fine. That's fine.
But we record on Sundays.
Yeah. And it's a day that we both get off together, so that's nice.
Yeah.
All right, let's just get at it.
Okay, so in the past, we've talked about immune systems and stuff like that, but I feel like one of the things that we hear about regularly that we never actually know what it is immunoglobulins.
Goblins that live in your immuno?
Yes. Immunoglobulins, like you hear people say that like their count was low or whatever, but I actually had to research this on my own to find out what it is. We didn't really cover it, at least in my MB1, we never really talked about it. But, so here's what immunoglobulins are. They are a part of your immune system,
mm-hmm.
and they're created by plasma cells, okay? They're called the active agents in humoral response. Make sense?
Do they have, like, black outfits and guns?
Yes, they do. No, they don't. So, first, the humoral response is the immune system, like the immune response, that uses stuff that was secreted into bodily fluids. So, like, into your blood and things like that.
Uh-huh.
So, you have, like, a cell-mediated response where the cell that gets infected is what's mounting the fight. Humoral response is, humoral is in, like, your humors.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So humoral response means that there's stuff in your blood trying to fight. Not necessarily the cells, but the other things that respond. You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
Like proteins and stuff like that. So they're the parts of the active agents in humoral response. And what they are is they're made up of proteins, like all these different proteins linked together. And they have two heavy chains and two light chains. So, like, one looks like an X and one looks like a Y, but there's, like, a heavy side and a light side. And one part of those chains is always the same.
What part?
Well, it's different depending on which immunoglobulin.
Oh, okay.
Like, different type of immunoglobulin. But so, like, there's a part that's, like, always, always consistent. And then there's another part that changes with every immunoglobulin. And the part that changes is antibody specific. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah. So basically what their job is to be
special,
like
special crime fighting source.
Yeah, but it's not just like special crime fighting source. It's like I am prepped for this very specific type of antigen. So it'd be like, okay, yeah, so saying special crime fighting force, but it's like a special crime fighting force that is an anti-gang task force and
only one specific gang.
One specific gang.
As opposed to gangs in general.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really, really pointed.
Or even like the fall guy in the specific gang.
Yeah.
You know, just like even smaller.
Although the only thing is following that analogy is that some of the immunoglobulins have more than one active site, like more than one variable region, so they can be specific to multiple antibodies depending on what they're being programmed for.
Oh, okay.
But that is the idea, that they have basically one section of it is always the same, so that we know our immune system knows that immunoglobulin, that protein, that it belongs to us.
Oh, okay.
Because if we don't know that it belongs to us, we're going to try and take it out.
Yeah.
And then we also have another section of each immunoglobulin that is antibody specific so that it can fight something very, you know, particular. So there are five types of immunoglobulins. Honestly, immunoglobulin is just kind of really fun to say.
Immunoglobulin.
Yeah, doesn't sound like really scientific.
Yeah, it also feels like my tongue is too big for my mouth.
That's also part of
immunoglobulin.
But I think that's part of why it's fun. I think that's part of why it's fun. Okay, so there's IgG because they're all like Ig something.
Okay.
Ig immunoglobulin G.
Okay.
Okay, that's most abundant. There's like 60 to 75% of immunoglobulin G of our immunoglobulins are immunoglobulin G. And what's cool about the IgG is that it has the ability to cross the placenta.
Oh.
So it's really, really important for, like, you know, helping babies.
Babies build an immune system.
Yeah. And what it does is it promotes something called opsonization. And opsonization enhances phagocytosis. So phagocytosis is a cell eating a cell or some kind of debris.
Okay.
Okay. So, like, your natural killer cells from your immune system or your neutrophils or whatever, like, all the regular, like, white body or white blood cells that we think about, they go ahead and they eat all the bad stuff. But how does it know what the bad stuff is?
Right.
So, opsonization is coding. So, because it has an antibody specific or antigen specific area, it knows what the bad stuff is. Immunoglobulin G does. So, it gives it, like, a coding that says, eat this to the macrophages.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what IgG or immunoglobulin G does. Immunoglobulin A is like in your, it's 10 to 15%. It's used in your saliva and your tears, respiratory system. And remember when we talked about like,
if it's in your saliva mucus and tears, is in all of your mucous membranes?
Yeah.
Is it in my vagina? Is what I'm really asking.
Probably, yeah. As far as I know, it is. Yeah, actually, you know what? I have it right here. Actually, I have it right here. That yes, it is.
I didn't even read your notes.
You can't read that far.
Yes, I can. I've got really good eyes.
You do have really good eyes.
I just didn't.
So whenever you do that, it throws me off my. What was I saying? Oh, so it's in all those different areas, and it's like, one of its big jobs is to prevent pathogens from attaching to the mucus that we don't want it to attach to.
Oh, okay.
So that it, like, you know, it'll help wash things out of your eyes because it's preventing things from attaching to the mucus of your eyes.
Sure.
To the
outside, okay.
The membrane, rather. Immunoglobulin A's, those are the really important ones in breastfeeding.
Oh.
Over bottle feeding, because we don't make these terribly readily, but they're really important for babies. And until they have a chance to make it, when we talk about the value of boosting immune system through breastfeeding, we're really talking about immunoglobulin A. And so some studies have linked bottle feeding to allergies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that because when they were young, they didn't build the right immunoglobulin A's because they didn't get transferred.
Sure.
And so then they never built them. And so then they're allergic to more things. And that's some studies. I'm not saying this is scientific fact.
Sure,
there's
sure,
studies
sure. Yeah,
out
yeah,
there
yeah,
saying
yeah.
It. Immunoglobulin M, not quite so many of them, 8 to 10%. But what's cool about immunoglobulin M is it's like massive compared to the others. In fact, they even call it the macroglobulin.
Macroglobulin.
Yeah.
Globulin. I can't say macro, like I want to say.
Macroglobulin?
I want to say goblin.
That's fair. So they're the first to reach sites of infection. So like something happens and then these come in are just like ready to rumble. And the reason they're so big is they have 10 of those binding sites, 10 different places for them to be, or so they can be specific to 10 different things at once. So it's a wide variety of pathogens that they can work against. And so they're really important in our defense. Well, that's why they're so big, because and that's why they're the first, like, responders, is because they're kind of the broadest, you know. Then there's immunoglobulin D, which is, like, 0.2% of them.
D as in dog?
D as in dog.
Okay.
When I study with my friends, we say D as in deep.
Oh.
And B as in beep. And C as in seep. And, like,
you guys are so lame.
We are super funny. You know why we have immunoglobulin Ds?
No.
Neither do we.
Oh.
Nobody really knows yet. We haven't figured it out. The one thing that we think is that they actually live on B cells, which is another type of, well, not another type, but it's a white blood cell.
Mm-hmm.
So we think they live on them and work as like receptors. And then the last one is immunoglobulin E, which we have.
As an EEP.
E as an EEP. Yeah. Okay, see, now you know why it's funny. Shake. Don't shake your head at me.
I'm shaking my head at you.
All right. So those mediate allergic reactions and their defense against parasitic infections. And they're, again, mostly present mucous membrane, skin, and lungs, because that's where we mostly, you know, have allergens.
Oh, sure, yeah.
No. So that's immunoglobulins. Like I said, there's, you know, the handful of types. What's really kind of the takeaway is that they're the ones that help identify things for us to take them on. And that's how they do it.
All right. Immunoglobulins. Make sure you check us out on artofmedschool.com. We have a ton of more information, blog posts, any of our past episodes that you might have missed, as well as some really fun underwater photography that Mike has been working on. There's some cute photos of fish. So check us out on artofmedschool.com. Hey, Micah, I know something about you.
You're my wife. I feel like you know many things about me.
One of the things I know about you is you like food. Most people do.
Most people like food, or most people know that about me? Because I feel like both is
true. That is also true. So this section is much anticipated, the local food section.
Yeah, we do get a lot of people asking us about this.
Yeah, so what I really enjoy about the local foods here is that it is the story of colonialism and a lot of the story of slavery on this island. So
that is a heavy-handed statement.
Well, I think that, you know, usually foods of certain locations are reflective of the culture, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I totally see what you're saying, that their food is, of a location is reflective of the culture that has made that location.
Yeah. So,
look at Vietnamese food and the French and Asian influence.
Oh my gosh, it's so good.
I love Vietnamese.
Yeah. So, what I really find to be interesting here, which I kind of wasn't anticipating, was that there is a huge South Asian Indian influence in a lot of the cooking.
Yeah, that's definitely true. A lot of curry.
And
I expected curried goat, just because I'd heard that was going to be a thing.
That was a thing.
Yeah.
But it wasn't something I was expecting, and I am pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we were actually talking about it just the other day, me and a few other students, and some of them are not thrilled with the food here.
I mean, there's some things that I'm not thrilled with.
But I think the quality of the food is also endemic of essentially the place and culture.
Right.
That there's not a lot of high-end restaurants or places that you can go that are really, really flavorful, because straight up, that's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And there is not a lot of money on this island to help keep those places afloat. And the tourism here is also not huge.
Yeah.
So it's not like there's enough rich people coming to drop 50 U.S. on a meal and not think twice about it, because that would be normal.
Mm-hmm.
Where 50 Canadian, or not Canadian, Caribbean would be an expensive meal.
That would be an expensive meal.
And that's like 15 U.S.
Yeah, which is what you get at, you know, I don't know, Applebee's or something.
Yeah.
So what I find to be really interesting is the main fish that people eat here is called saltfish, and it's a long preservation fish.
Right.
And that you can keep it at room temperature for a really long period of time.
Yeah. Which makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense that you can preserve fish without having to have electricity indefinitely.
Yep.
Right?
And electricity is expensive here.
Yeah, it really is expensive. Also, the big main, staple of like carbohydrates is breadfruit. Yep. And breadfruit was brought over from the from the South Pacific. Mm. And so when those sailors were coming over, they brought breadfruit trees, and now it's become like a local dish, even though the breadfruit tree is not endemic to this island.
Right, right.
So I, you know, I think that's really interesting too, that it's the story of yeah. all of the people that have come through yeah. there.
Well, and that's an interesting idea too, is how long does something have to be local before it actually is local?
Right.
You know?
And, you know, and the majority of the people here are not the native people to here. The majority of the people that live in St. Vincent are descendants from the sugar plantation slavery
right,
days.
Right.
That most people have African descent or Indian descent, because the Africans were brought over as slaves, but the majority of the Indians were brought over as indentured servants.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of mixture within that.
Yeah.
So some of my top favorite foods are, for me, the ones that are more Indian foods.
Mm.
You know, there's this amazing, magical food called roti.
I really dig roti. Especially beef roti.
Yeah. So roti is just the Hindi word straight up for bread. But it's like a curry burrito.
Yes.
And so it's usually got potatoes, it's usually got curry, onions, ginger, and then it either has chicken, fish, beef, or something that they call chunks. And
chunks?
Chunks.
I see that.
Yeah, so chunks is usually like anybody that's a vegetarian, Rastafarians are all vegetarians.
Oh, like provisions in a way.
No, they are, it's like a soy-based protein.
Oh, so, no wonder I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, so it's the soy-based protein that's kind of, like, closer to, like, tempeh.
Okay.
It's got, like, more of, like, a meaty taste than, like, a tofu.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's a... And you can purchase that dried and rehydrated.
Yeah,
so anytime you go
eat, like tofu.
Yeah. So anytime you go eat ital, and ital is just the Rastafarian cooking.
Yep.
And ital is always vegetarian, and it always focuses on local ingredients as much as possible.
Yeah.
And so you can have ital that's like a rice soup, which is what I get. Downtown, it's really cheap and super yummy, and I haven't been able to bring you there yet.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or
yeah, I had ital that was like kind of like a bread pocket. It actually reminded me of a flesh kikla or like a runza, but stuff with veg.
Yeah.
Random stuff, and I think it sort of tasted like it was deep fat fried, but it was probably baked. This is
sure.
not a lot of frying on the island.
Yeah, so actually that reminds me of something that is a common food here.
I wanted to mention real quick, conch roti.
You can get conch roti, yeah. And conch is like those big shells.
Yeah, like the conch shell.
That people blow and yeah.
Yep.
It sounds a lot like what you had was called a patty. And a patty is essentially a bread pocket of filled with something. So you can get them in beef, you can get them in veg, you can get them in chicken. And yeah, they remind me a lot of Fleisch Kikla.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
Which is a food of your people.
It is a food of my people.
Yeah.
Actually, every culture has some sort of meat pocket sort of deal going on.
Fast and on the go.
Yep.
Back on the kind of South Asian influence, probably this food, I'm pretty sure, is either equal for my number one favorite or has surpassed my number one favorite.
Totally know what you're going to say.
Now, what is it?
Double.
Oh, my gosh. The doubles are so good. They're all of my favorite things.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of like... It's kind of like a fried bread, flatbread, and it's kind of served like a taco. And inside is chickpeas and curry, and it's got this like sweet tamarind sauce, and then you put the spicy chili sauce on it, and it's got the sweet and the salty and the spicy, and it's all of my favorite things altogether.
That's it's
a traditional breakfast.
Yeah.
So what I found out,
which it's an interesting thing for a breakfast.
I don't think so.
No, I mean, like, it's just not normal like breakfast food that you think of. You
know? Yeah.
That's what I mean. That is interesting for breakfast.
And so what I find to be interesting is that people talk that doubles are traditional from Trinidad, that it's a Trinidad dish. And people talk about patties as being a Jamaican dish. And so all of the conversations through the islands and trade and whatever has also helped, you know, trade all of that food.
Some food, yeah.
The food that's identified as being the most Vincentian is the breadfruit and saltfish. Or saltfish and provisions.
Yeah.
And provisions, I figured out, is not just one thing. It is pretty much root vegetables. So there's these root vegetables called edos that are kind of like potatoes.
I love edos.
I know you do. They do have a local potato. They have sweet potato. And then plantain doesn't, you know, it's not a root vegetable, but it's got that same sort of starchy quality. Yep. And so
kind of rooty flavor.
Yeah. So when they talk about provisions, it's usually a combination of all of those things.
Yeah. It's sort of like, I think if you like carrot, what is it, carrot, celery, and onion, and how you can, in a lot of American and European cooking, you can just throw those three things in just about anything and it'll work.
Yeah, that's
sort of like a Caribbean version of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And then they have something they call bakes, which are always fried, which I think is funny. And it's, bakes are straight up fry bread in the Caribbean.
Right, yeah.
And if you don't know what fry bread is, it's exactly what it sounds like.
Yep.
It is a donut-like fried bread.
Oh, it's so good, too.
Yeah. So, and bakes are essentially just a savory donut. And often another common breakfast thing is bakes and saltfish sandwich. Mm, and that you have a bake that, you know, they're about the size of your fist. They cut it open, put, like, this saltfish, and it's saltfish mixed with cabbage and onions and, it's good.
It is good.
It's salty.
Some of the saltfish gets real salty.
Yeah, but just as a sandwich on the go. Barbecuing is really, really common here.
A lot of grilling. A lot of chicken.
Yeah.
Like, a tremendous amount of, like, I don't think I've ever eaten so much chicken in my life.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
And what I find hilarious about the barbecuing is that the barbecues are always made out of propane tanks.
And they don't see why it's funny at all.
No. Because people don't have propane grills here. They only have these grills that are made out of propane tanks. And I think it is the most hilarious irony.
I think what's also really funny is that the person who grills my favorite chicken is a Rasta.
Yeah.
I mean, so he's not allowed to eat it, but he can grill.
He can grill it like a beast. Yeah. Like, it's so good.
It is extremely good.
Yeah. So, and then usually covered in a jerk sauce.
Yeah, actually, that barbecue Caribbean jerk sauce.
We actually get a packaged one that's so good.
Yeah, and it's packaged like Heinz or whatever. Like, it's obviously not processed necessarily, but it's obviously done in mass.
Large scale, yeah. And really great. It's got, I mean, anytime that I have a jerk sauce, it's really close to a barbecue sauce. It's got some extra heat. It's got some extra sour. Usually there's a tamarind in there somewhere, and coriander is in there as well. Cinnamon too. And so really great, really great, really intense, really bold flavor profile, which is what I like.
Yep.
So, there's other foods, of course. But I think for today, that's the local foods that...
Yeah, that's all our favorites.
Yeah, those are my favorite foods locally. Hey, we launched our Patreon account. Please go check it out. You can find a link on our website or just look up Art of Med School on patreon.com. This is a great way to support us as we work hard to make the most and best content possible. You can find more information on our homepage at artofmedschool.com. And every little bit helps. Thanks.
All right. So we spent a long time talking about food, didn't we?
Man, I'm hungry.
I know, I am too.
Ooh, we're totally going to do one about local drinks.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so since I knew that we were doing food today, I thought it would be interesting to also do something about the GI tract. And we've talked about blood flow and some other things about it, but I thought it'd be neat to look at the different cells that happen in your GI tract and kind of how on more of a cellular level, all the differences between the different parts.
Okay.
Not all the differences, because we've only got about 5 minutes that I get to talk here. okay, so serving through esophagus, we've talked about this kind of cell type before, stratified squamous epithelium. So, again, the stratified squamous is a real thin kind of fried egg looking.
Oh, yeah.
And they're really good about, when it's stratified means that there's multiple layers. So they're really good about, like, sloughing off. So it helps protect whatever they're sitting on top of. And it's non-keratinized, so it means that it's a little bit less or more pliable than, like, because that's what's on top of your skin.
Mm.
So it's more pliable than like that. So, but you're sending food down the esophagus, it's got to stand up to the wear and tear of freshly eaten food. So we have stratified epithelium, or squamous epithelium,
oh, right.
Which,
like,
makes sense.
I'm thinking about when I put huge handfuls of popcorn in my mouth and swallow without chewing very much. As the popcorn goes,
yeah,
all down my
esophagus. Yeah, so it actually is an issue, and it's something that your body has a defense against. And what's cool too about the esophagus is the top part of your esophagus is surrounded by, well, the whole thing is surrounded by muscle, but the top part is surrounded by skeletal muscle. So skeletal muscle is the kind of muscle that we can control voluntarily.
Mm.
We can tell when to contract.
Sure.
The bottom part, like the bottom third, is not skeletal muscle. It's actually smooth muscle, which we have no control over. No, like, conscious control.
Sure.
Like your heart, you know?
Yeah.
So it's smooth muscle. Actually, heart's a bad example because it's the only like other type of muscle in the body that we don't have control of that's also not smooth muscle.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and then it transitions between the two. But so we can control swallowing, but then once it gets to a certain point, we can't control it anymore, and our body takes over and makes sure to send it the rest of the way down.
Oh.
And it's kind of a neat process. It's called peristalsis, or peristaltic activity, that moves that, like, bolus of food down. And then there's a couple sphincters, one at the top and one at the bottom of your esophagus, just to make sure that the food is going in the right direction and not coming back up unless it needs to.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So, like,
you just did. You can ask a second one.
Excellent. So when I was in my younger days and would do a beer bong.
Yeah.
And you're not swallowing.
You're just relaxing the throat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much of a problem is that?
Not like the swallowing part, or the not swallowing, just pouring it down. That's not a big deal. Because it's also fluid.
Sure.
You know, if it was like, if you were trying to do a fried chicken bong, that would probably, actually, that sounds kind of awesome.
No,
kind
because
of
you're bypassing the taste buds and you're not actually eating the chicken.
Right. But that would be like, you know, there's a reason that we chew, and it's not just to tear it all up, but we put saliva into it, and so it's moistened, so it helps, like, go down easier your throat. For the chicken, I mean, for the beer, you're just pouring it straight into your stomach is all you really do.
Yeah, okay.
But there is a sphincter down there.
Don't do it, kids, and drink responsibly. Only if you're 21 plus, or 18 plus in St. Vincent and the Grenadines.
That's true. Okay, so then there's the stomach, which is, we've talked about this before, actually in the peptic ulcer one we really talked about.
Mm-hmm.
It's super acidic.
Yeah.
And it's got a mucosal border that goes all around the inside of the stomach that it routinely maintains to protect the lining. So there's, and in the stomach, there's all these pits, these little gastric pits, which secrete inactivated acid. So acid that's not acid yet. It's like it's like pre-acid. And then it also secretes, so that's at, like, in the pit, that's like at the bottom.
Uh-huh.
And then where it gets released, and then it sends it up. And then in the neck of the pit, like at the top, that's where it creates the mucosal. That's where it secretes the mucus.
Okay.
So it doesn't actually get activated until it gets into the stomach and past where that mucus lining is.
Oh.
Yeah, which is really smart, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, it just eat through itself.
Right.
And there's other, not even just the acid, but there's, you know, when we eat protein, and our body needs to break down that protein so we can make use of it.
Mm-hmm.
What makes up a large part of your body? Proteins.
Yes.
So the enzymes that break down the proteins need to do it in a very safe environment that where it can't reach our proteins of ourselves.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we'd digest ourselves.
We'd be eating ourselves.
Yeah. The other thing, and I think we might have talked about this, but alcohol is absorbed in the stomach.
Right. Yeah, that drinking wouldn't be any fun if it was absorbed anywhere lower.
Right. Because then you go have a few beers after work and you don't, doesn't do anything until you get home later that night, and then all of a sudden you're drunk for no reason.
Yeah.
The other thing that's really interesting about the stomach is, you know, we actually have taste buds in our stomach.
What? I did not know that.
Yeah, bitter, umami, and sweet.
Oh.
We have found taste buds in this. I don't know why we have taste buds in our stomach, but it's in there. Let's see, we did that. Upper half parietal cells, which secrete hydrochloric acid, chief cells. Okay, let's talk about the small intestine. There's plicae circulares. So the small intestine, their job is basically to do a lot of the digestion, but also do some absorption, right? And so the digestion, that part happens mostly in the duodenum, which is the first part of the small intestine. And then the absorption happens in the jejunum and the ileum, which is the second and third part. So we, in the duodenum, we break everything down, or finish breaking everything down.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, we absorb all those nutrients and everything that we can, that we want to use. Right?
Okay, yeah.
Okay. So in order to absorb, it has to go across the wall of the small intestine. Like, it's inside the tube,
uh-huh.
And then it needs to go outside
the
tube.
Okay.
So what we find, you know, on the cell level inside of the small intestine is plicae circulares, which are like folds of mucosa and submucosa. Like, as you look at the wall, it's like folds coming in to that tube space. And that increases the
surface area.
Yeah, the surface area. So that we can absorb more.
I'm learning so much.
You are. Those increase the surface area 2 to 3 times.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then on top or on the outside or lining all those little folds coming in are intestinal villi. And those are, like, picture a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
That's a plicae circular. And then on the mountain are all these trees.
Sure.
Sticking up all around. That's all the intestinal villi.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay. So that, again,
making it furry.
Yeah.
For surface area.
For more surface area. So now we've increased it another tenfold. So 2 to 3 times already, and now 10 more. And now on all those trees, think about all the different leaves and branches and stuff like
that.
Oh,
sure, yeah.
That's our microvilli from all the different cells. And that increases the surface area a further 20-fold.
Shoot.
Yeah, so we have a tremendous amount of surface area inside of our stomach so that we can do all this absorption. And
you mean small
like
intestines?
Or, yeah, sorry, small intestines.
Stomachs. Okay.
To increase all the space for absorption and stuff. And then last, we have the large intestine, which honestly is not that interesting.
Yeah?
I don't think so. What it does is...
Doesn't it, like, absorb fluid?
Yeah, usually.
And makes it so you make poop.
Yeah, well, that's what you're doing is you're taking out all the water, not all the water, but a lot of the water needs to come back out so you can reuse it. A lot of the bile gets reabsorbed here because in your duodenum there's bile that gets excreted to emulsify fats.
Sure.
And then it gets reabsorbed so that you can continue to use it in your small intestine or in your large intestine. There's also that's where a lot of the bacteria live that synthesize different vitamins, and we reabsorb electrolytes and stuff like that in the large intestine. So it does do some neat stuff like that. But for the most part, its job is just to compact all that ingested material into feces.
Yeah, make poop.
Yeah.
All right. Well.
I would say the one thing that was really cool about the large intestine 90% of your immune system is in that area.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
That is crazy. I think I might have made it up, but wouldn't that be really interesting if it was true?
Yeah.
It is a really high number, but I can't remember exactly what the number is now.
Well, there you go. All right, everybody, there you have it. That is episode 16, where we talked about immunoglobulins, local foods here in St. Vincent, and how your body doesn't eat itself or the GI tract on a cellular level. Join us next week for episode 17 and a whole lot of marvelous stuff. Thanks. Bye. Our theme music, Urbanimatronica Wuya Mix by Spinning Mercata, is copyright 2011, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. This show is not affiliated or endorsed in any way by St. James School of Medicine. Micah just goes there. The Art of Med School podcast is part of the Art of Med School Network. For more information, find us on the web at artofmedschool.com.